What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, the morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is September 2nd, Labor Day. Happy holiday. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball. I have to apologize to everybody. I did not put out a Plus Pitch Podcast last week like I thought I would. I was overly ambitious going to San Francisco thinking, look, I'm going to still do this every single day. Nothing's changed. And everything changed and it messed me up completely. And the good news, I'm here the rest of the season. I'm not traveling until the end of the year, which means that I'm going to be putting out this Plus Pitch Podcast on normal routine, on normal schedule moving forward, and I'm so excited for that. Thank you everyone who found the time to go to Garage on, Garage on Friday for the live edition of The Craft. It is on YouTube, so go check out The Craft Podcast on YouTube to find that live stream, as well as OTC and Fireside Chat. They are both live on YouTube as we work to get every single one of the podcasts on the Pitchers Podcast Network, including this one, on YouTube in the future for live streaming, and then you can watch the video cast. It's awesome. Okay. Caden Dana made his MLB debut for the Angels yesterday against the Mariners. 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 2 hits, 4 walks, 4 Ks. Not a bad line for an MLB debut. However, I'm not very impressed with what he does. The slider is mediocre, the fastball's mediocre, and they're really just isn't much else. This is not the kind of guy that you want to go after as a fun spec guy who could really win you your league down the stretch. Obviously, sneaky streams are the name of the game in September, and it's totally possible that Caden can find a way through 6 innings again. I'm just going to say no for the most part, unless it's a great matchup. He doesn't really have that. No. I'm not going to go after this with Caden Dana moving forward. Sean Manaea is doing so well. Mike Petriello put out a great tweet about his changing arm angles from both vertical and horizontal respects, and 7 innings of 0 runs against the White Sox as he dominated again. He is a Baja man to me. What that means is he's someone who's having a hot summer, one-hit wonder kind of thing, and not someone to really pick up next year. But in the moment, my gosh, Who Let the Dogs Out is such a good song. Alex Cobb against the Pirates got the gold star because he was essentially perfect for a while here, and then had a grounder up the middle that he stopped and it didn't work out, infield single, all that fun stuff. But it was 6 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 0 walks in 6 Ks for Cobb against the Pirates. Obviously got the win. His splitter was great. That's really the thing. Yes, it is the thing. It's actually known as, quote, the thing, end quote, as his nickname. He didn't have it previously, came back from the IL. I had no expectations and is still ill here. I had no desire to start Cobb until I saw that splitter. But now that it's there, I'm kind of interested. Unfortunately, it's the Dodgers next. So I'm not going to go for that. If the splitter is still good there, though, you might want to jump in as he gets the Rays after that. You have Ronel Blanco against the Royals, got the win, 5 innings of 0 runs, but 7 base runners with 4 walks and 3 Ks. The overall arsenal was not what you want from Blanco. The slider wasn't perfect. The changeup was used minimally. Yes, he did go mostly against right-handers, so thus fewer changeups, but the slider wasn't good. And Ronel Blanco had this amazing first half of changeup dominance and slider dominance, and he's really faded with both of those pitches over the last month. You are a little skeptical, aren't you, of his next start? I totally get that. At the same time, like, you're going to go with Blanco the rest of the way. But just like Sean Manaea, I might be calling him a Baja man. I don't know. I hope to see the changeup and slider both work exceptionally well down the stretch. It might just be fatigue, as Blanco has not really gone this far into the season before. Cooper Criswell against the Tigers went 4 innings of perfection, 5 innings, 5 Ks, I should say. And then you had Rich Hill go 0.2 innings. Cooper Criswell was pulled after 52. They're not going to go with that, so I guess we don't go with it either. Yarrel Rodriguez, 3 innings, followed by 3.1 of the Friday Pirate. That is Ryan Yarbrough, who did well, but he didn't get the win in the end. Yeah, you don't want to go with either of those guys. You have Brent Herter, open 4 by Bo Brisky, and Herter went 5 innings of 1 run, 6 hits, 0 walks, and 5 Ks. That's awesome. He would have gotten a win if things didn't get messy by the end. And I could see this being a Toby play for vulturing wins. Maybe it works against the Athletics in Oco next time. But he's really just a Toby, guys. It's nothing exceptional here. Jose Ureña was open 4 and did 1 run in 4.2 innings, but 8 hits and 1 walk and 2 Ks, and obviously you don't want to go for that. Zach Eflin did great things coming off the IL with a shoulder injury to get a 7 innings and 1 run, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts for the win in Coors, which I really didn't expect. 13 over 36 whiffs on his curveball is amazing. He kept it down. It was the best version of the curveball we've seen. Cutter worked as well. I'm so glad to see that. I feel like it was one of those days of Eflin finding the curve feel and rolling with that. Don't really lean in too hard into it. At the same time, obviously, we're just going to start Eflin, but Yeah, I don't think that you're going to see 13 over 36 Swifts on that curve, which is also kind of weird because it was Coors at home. Bailey Ober, remember that weirdness against Atlanta? Okay, fine. Six innings, one run, one hit, three walks, eight Ks. He's dope. He's an ace. He's going to ace. And yes, I know three games of the year have been terrible for Ober. That's why he has an ERA closer to four than he should. At the same time, his skills are elite with his fastball, his changeup, and his slider. And really, in each of those games, it's like one inning where everything just falls apart. And I really can't emphasize enough how those momentary lapses should not define a pitcher for the season. If you as a fantasy manager feel like, well, how am I supposed to deal with this? It's never going to be nine earned runs every time, right? Never going to be. It's not going to be that every time. And to say that Ober is all of a sudden more prone to that than other pitchers, I think is actually getting kind of lost in the fact that it was just such an extreme bad day a couple times he's had it. And I think that's more of just small sample than it is Ober just being bad. Because other guys have had bad games. By the way, every pitcher every year has bad games. It's just that Ober's happened to be worse than others, while the other starts are just as good, if not better, in some aspects. You have Jordan Wicks against the Nationals coming back from the IL. We haven't seen him for a long time. Five innings, one run, four hits, zero walks, and zero strikeouts. How am I supposed to butter my bread with that? What? 16 inches of vert is not the vert that we saw that got me excited earlier on. He is trying to do that Blake Snell blueprint of four seamers upstairs and changeups down for Jordan Wicks, but just one whiff on 23 heaters. Low changeups didn't get many whiffs, just three overall for Jordan Wicks. And they got outs, and that's how he did this. Slider wasn't so bad, but I'm not excited by Jordan Wicks right now. Garrett Crochet, 3.1 innings, so 10 outs and 8 strikeouts. And man, I have to note, that doesn't hurt. Like, one earned run, three hits, zero walks, eight Ks. This helped you. He got a loss, sure, but that is beneficial for your team. Now, is it more beneficial than a proper start that maybe had a win involved and a larger expression of a low ERA and whip? No, I mean, it's really just like how much do you need those strikeouts versus a possible win and those ratios. That's up to you. But the fact that he's still doing that is pretty cool. Obviously, we're not going to expect 8Ks every time, though. So, yeah, you're probably dropping Crochet. I don't know how to feel about him next year. I think he's going to get dealt at the winter meetings, which I'm planning to go to as of right now, so that's a whole thing that we'll talk about another time. But if he isn't, I'm probably more out on Crochet. Anywhere that he gets dealt to, I'm very much in. You have Aaron Nola against Atlanta. Six innings, two earned runs, four hits, one walk, and nine strikeouts. Ace is going to ace with a gallows pole, 21 whiffs against Atlanta. His curveball is just too good. It's a 3.29 ERA with a 1.15 whip and 162 strikeouts so far for Nola, which is pretty cool, meaning that he's going to flirt with 200 strikeouts once again. And honestly, you drafted Nola because you expected strikeouts to be there again. They are. You expected a good one win probability. I believe he has 12 wins now, so 15 wins is very, very attainable. And the ratio is to be better than they were last year. Well, 3.29 ERA and a 1.15 whip is a little high. But he's never really like a 1.05. Really, you expect like a 1.10, 1.15. There you go. Tobias Myers against the Reds. 5.2 innings of 200 runs, 8 hits, 4 walks, and 7 Ks. Not what you wanted, but it was in Sin City, so at least there's that. He was more kitchen sink than I've seen. And the four-seamer was effective in the zone, but it got beat up a little bit more than used to. The Reds certainly went attacking for it, and they benefit from it. Also, he didn't really have many pitches that were able to step up and get strikes in the zone as much as before. But I still feel like we're fine with Myers. This is a weird one of 12 base runners in those four walks. I feel like that's atypical, or I should say not representative of what he was doing. So he gets Rocky Road next. Tobias Myers, I'm all for that one. We're going to talk about everybody else from yesterday's game. We saw Brandon Williamson here, Mitch Spence, and of course Spencer Schwalbach. We're going to talk about all of that after this break. Spencer Schwalbach against the Phillies, 5.2 innings of 200 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and just 2 strikeouts. Unfortunate because the secondaries weren't getting whiffs. Only 2 whiffs on 33 curves, cutters, and sliders, which is very strange for Mr. Crescendo. His 4-seamer, though, 13 foul balls and only 4 in play, which is great. You just don't want that 4-seamer to get hit into play, and that allowed him to get enough strikes and allowed him to get through this one enough because those weren't hit into play. The secondaries were hit into play, and those were outs, and that's very good. So I wanted to give Spencer the ace is going to ace tag. I couldn't because those secondaries did not get as many missed swings as we wanted. Missed swings? You know what I mean. Misses. Swing and misses. All right, than usual. But yeah, Spencer Schmalbach is still dope. It makes us feel dope. We have Mitch Spence against the Rangers, and I kind of dig him. I mean, he keeps changing what he does as far as his approach with his cutter. Last game was upstairs. This one was way down. And it was more of a neckbeard approach with that sinker, cutter, and slider, mostly the latter two. Sinkers showed up sometimes and were actually really bad as a strike pick, just 6 over 16 with just one out induced in play. I still think the cutter and slider are great. And he gets the Tigers next, and that's actually kind of interesting. I do wonder if the Rays, like, this is a Rays pitcher, same with Bailey Falter. If there's a three-way trade that includes Mitch Spence and Bailey Falter going to the Rays, that'll be the funniest thing ever. You have Brandon Williamson against the Brewers with Jacob Junis following. And Williamson kind of did something interesting with 53% usage at 40% CSW on the cutter. Not fastball. That's on the cutter for Brandon Williamson, which is great. That's how he succeeded last year with the changeup, but the changeup was 5 over 16 strikes. So I do wonder if Brandon Williamson does get stretched out more by the Reds. 66 pitches. Could be closer to 75 to 80 and so on and so forth. While Jacob Junis isn't the guy to circle as a vultured win guy after. Mitchell Parker looked good against the Cubs. I know it wasn't the best line of 6 innings and 3 runs for a poor quality start with 7 hits and a walk. But 8 strikeouts with all 4 of his pitches working, especially the slider. 7 for 11 whiffs is great. That's a convenience store in itself. And that's the Pirates and Marlins next for Mitchell Parker. That could be the moment to jump in here, especially if that slider is still there. Brandon Faulk got 10 strikeouts against the Dodgers, but it's the Dodgers, and he flirted with a very, very poor quality start of 5.2 innings, 300 runs, 8 hits, and 2 walks. He did get a win because it was such a disastrous inning for Rebelski in the second. Rebelski? That's fine. I don't really think that Faulk did anything so spectacular that's going to land next time out. I mean, those four-seamers were upstairs, sweepers were doing their normal thing, and then he also did see some sinkers and changeups, like 1 or 2 curves or something like that down. But Brandon Faulk is still a cherry bomb because he doesn't have a third pitch. And it drives me up the wall. And just keep in mind, because it was 10 strikeouts, that's great. But the ratios were still bad. It was a dusty donut of wins and strikeouts versus your ratios. You have Mitch Keller against the Guardians. 5.1 innings of 300 runs, 11 hits, 0 walks, and 7 Ks. He did get a King Cole 38% CSW. But he got singled out because guys can hit his stuff pretty well. You know, I mean, that's just how it is. It's always been that way. That's why he's a cherry bomb, Mitch Keller. I just don't want to go with it. Alec Marsh surprised me against the Astros for 5 innings of 300 runs and just 5 base runners and 5 Ks. That's cool. He's going to get some opportunities with Michael Lorenzen out. But he does get the the Twins next. And he could get the Pirates in 2 games. That is Alec Marsh. But I didn't really see much here that made me super excited. He had a sweeper going 4 for 7 whiffs. That was nice. He managed to kind of avoid the 4-seamer around the zone. So it didn't, you know, hurt too much, but yeah, Alec Marsh isn't that guy you want to go for. Dylan Cease earned his 200th strikeout, which is awesome, against the Rays, but he only earned 4 total here. 5 innings pitched, 3 earned runs, 2 hits, and 3 walks with those 4 strikeouts. He needs a better approach against left-handers. I still feel like he needs the cutter for that one. And he was actually going 5 innings strong, and then 6th inning, he got the bases loaded without recording an out, and then all of the inherited runners scored when he was pulled after that. Which is awfully frustrating because this was a stud start with fewer Ks than expected, but he could have just turned that around, gone 6 innings with 6 Ks or something like that with 0 earned runs and 2 base runners. Like it just easily could have been that instead. So that's frustrating. I still am going to bang the drum on him needing a better left-handed approach, and that should be the cutter. Anyway, Bryce Miller against the Angels, 4.2 innings of 3 earned runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, and 4 Ks. A lot of 3s and 4s there. We saw a lot of secondaries. That is only 41% fastball usage, that is between the four-seamer and sinker, which meant that there were 31 sliders and sweepers combined for 7 whiffs and a 45% CSW. That's pretty cool. He didn't locate them super well, but I love the fact that Bryce Miller is trying to make that work. And I'm going to celebrate that. I do also think that he's worse outside of Safeco, as has illuminated to me. And I do hope so badly that next year Bryce Miller is able to really run with those secondaries more and make him a more complete pitcher. But for now, we just kind of keep going with Bryce Miller as a holly. Miles Michaelis went against the Yankees and it didn't work. Surprise, surprise. Darren McCona? Nope, don't know. Anyway, doesn't matter. He went against the Giants yesterday for the Marlins and not very good. And you don't really want to go for an 89 mile per hour sinker baller. Ryan Pepiot against the Padres, 3 innings of 3 runs, 4 hits, 4 walks, and 4 Ks, and his changeup was just 3 for 15 strikes. Oh boy. The cutter was fouled off, it wasn't put into play, or did it earn whiffs, so he couldn't put away batters with it, and it was a good fastball, it's the only fastball, but like, the other stuff wasn't there for him. So, very frustrating. He gets the Orioles next. I actually just made a very difficult decision. In my 12-teamer, I have playoff week, and I'm so much about win this week and figure out the next week later. And I realized that the only spot I really had, I needed a spot to be able to get some runs and RBI possibilities for Tuesday and Thursday. And Ryan Pepiot is the one that I need to drop. It's just a case of like, look, it's against the Orioles next. You are the worst start that I have. And I don't know if you're going to be that amazing next week. I think you should, but it's not a lock. It's not that I'm turning down potential value or potential dismay this week for a lock value next week. Get that out of your head. It is a higher probability of success next time out, and it's totally a possibility that it is very good against the Orioles. But if you're circling next week without winning this week, you're doing it wrong. Figure that out later, and right now, do the best thing you can as if this is the last week of the season. Nestor Cortez against the Cardinals, 4 innings of 5 earned runs, 9 hits, 1 walk, and 2 Ks. Very frustrating. I think he's a Toby and you just kind of need to do it for the win chance next time. It might be better to go for a streamer. Depends on your league. Ty Blach, yep, did not do well against the Orioles. Logan Webb against the Marlins, very disappointing. 6 innings, 6 earned runs, 8 hits, 0 walks, and 4 Ks. The Marlins timed their hits well, and that's really it. It was standard Webb affair, maybe not out of the zone as much as usual, but yeah, what are you going to do there? And Rybulski, as I mentioned before, got demolished by the Diamondbacks for 8 runs in the second, but otherwise was fine. It was 5.1 innings of 10 runs, 10 hits, 2 walks, 2 Ks. And otherwise, outside of that, he actually looked okay. It's one of those things where a pitcher is not defined by one inning. And I understand if you don't want to take any risk against Cleveland, but just don't rule it out completely. Like, because a guy goes 10 runs, it's kind of rare, unless you're James Shields, to just allow 9 runs, 10 runs, and all this stuff back to back. So, yeah, that's kind of my point there about Rybulski. And I don't want to go for it, but in your deep NL-only leagues, it does not rule them out for Cleveland next time out. All right, looking forward to today and tomorrow's games. We have a few changes for today. Andre Pallante is going instead of Steven Matz. Jack Leiter is going instead of Andrew Heaney. Ty Madden is going against the Padres, and Julian Aguilar against the Astros. The only one that is questionable there is Andre Pallante because he's done so well. But it is against the Padres, which I don't like. And it's just too risky. I really don't want to. Sorry, it's not against the Padres. I apologize. It's against the Brewers, which is better. I was like, why, man, I'm really high against the Padres here, right? Against the Brewers, which is better. But I don't think that Pallante is that good. And it's kind of boring if it does succeed. Looking forward to tomorrow's games. We have Chris Sale, Paul Skeens, Luis Castillo, Justin Steele, and Sonny Gray all in that top tier, pretty clear. In the probable start tiers, Jeffrey Springs against the Twins, Carlos Rodon against the Rangers, Tanner Bibee against the Royals. That's pretty straightforward. Ryan Nelson also against the Giants. I really like that start for him. I think the four-seamer is very good. Cutter Crawford against the Mets. I think if you have Cutter Crawford, you're going to do this. I actually am dropping Cutter Crawford in another league because he is the last one. And also, I don't love this start for the Mets. I have more starts than I need in that one. And after this, it's not good. So I'm dropping Cutter Crawford to get more offense this week because I feel like that's the bigger threat. You have David Festa against the Rays as my stream pick of the day. David Peterson against the Red Sox. He's just been doing too well. And away from Fenway is good to face as a pitcher, that Red Sox lineup. I'll say that again. The Red Sox lineup is not very good away from Fenway. Okay, cool. So David Peterson just rolling with it, even though I don't really love what he's doing. And then Kay Povich against the White Sox. I'm going for that one. I know it wasn't very good last time, but this is the White Sox. It's a good win chance. He's a Toby. That seems cool to me. Questionable start here. You have Chris Bassett against the Phillies. Don't love it. He does perform however he does, right? And we saw him do well in Fenway last time, so who knows here. Walker Buehler against the Angels. Meh. I think his approach was better last time, and this is such a good matchup that it could work out. Patrick Corbin against the Miami Marlins. And if you read the roundup on him, you would know that for 2 straight starts, Patrick Corbin has thrown a harder, better cutter, and it made him succeed twice in a row, including the Yankees last time out. And now he gets the Marlins. Just saying, it's a 2-step with the Pirates at the end of it too. Something to consider. Brady Singer against the Guardians. He's a cherry bomb. Aaron Civale, I know he did well last time, but I still don't trust the breakers. He gets the Cardinals. And Andrew Heaney gets the Yankees, and that's a strikeout upside play. Maybe that works, but he's just so cherry bomb, and you know, it's the Yankees. The do not start tier, there's JT Jin against the Mariners. And honestly, if he wasn't limited but to only 67 pitches last time, I might even have him in the questionable start one because he's just a sinker baller with a slider, and he's generally fine. And that could work and be good enough against the Mariners, but it's going to be like 70, 75 pitches or something. And I don't know if that's going to be enough of a ceiling for me to chase. Cal Harrison against the Diamondbacks. I don't like Cal Harrison. Max Meyer against the Nationals. Slider got whiffs last time. He still wasn't good, and don't do it. Tyler Phillips has had his moments. I don't care against the Jays. Reed Detmers is coming back, and that's cool. And I'm curious to see what he looks like. Last time I checked on Savant, he wasn't really getting his vert back on his four-seamer. And guess what? It's against the Dodgers, so you can't do that. Nick Nastrini against Baltimore. He was better last time, but it's Baltimore. And Kyle Freeland is facing Atlanta. At least it's outside of Coors, but I just don't want to do that whatsoever. All right, that is it for today. Thank you all so much for sticking around throughout the entire season. And if this podcast has helped you for the year, consider getting PL Plus or PL Pro. It's the number one way to support us. You get a ton of features from accessing our Discord and ad-free website and so many tools that I use to assess players that we provide to all PL Pro members using our unique PLV stats. It's stuff you won't find anywhere else with amazing rolling charts. And of course, our Discord is just the best with over, I think, 1,500 members and people who just want to talk about fantasy baseball the right way. All right, that is it for today. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.